a lot to talk about. When there's a milchama going on, there are many different things that go through many of our minds. For some people, this is very real because they have immediate family members who are serving on the front lines. For some people, they have cousins who are not immediate family members. But for all of us, it's an opportunity to think a little bit about some of the incredible dilemmas, some of the challenges that are going to be facing chayalim as they go into the field. And this is something that we hope will not have to come to a practical discussion in their lives, but it's something that I hope in the schus of our Talmud Torah will be something that will merit that they will not have to actually deal with this in practicality. So something to think about, a very, very interesting, important, but very difficult sugya that comes up is something that actually happened once again last week, but there is a precedent for this earlier in history of the Jewish people as well. The story is about Roy Klein. Roy Klein was a chayal, Hashem Yikom Damo. He's from Ra'anana. He was from the Golani Brigade, and he died in 2006 in the Lebanon War. The reason why he died is because he saw that there was a live grenade right in front of his platoon, right in front of his battalion, and he decided to volunteer of himself. He jumped on the grenade, taking his own life and saving a number of other troops who were with him. And unfortunately, he left behind a wife, Sarah, and two children, Gilad and Yoav. And he goes down in history as one of the great heroes of the Jewish people. This happened once again last week when there were terrorists all over these communities. And there was a chayal who saw that there was a grenade that was thrown, that was hurled toward his unit. And he decided to voluntarily go ahead and give up his own life in order to save the lives of so many others who were with him. So this is a very, very painful question. But the truth is that the halacha has a lot to say about this question. And you have to ask yourself, is this something that the halacha would sanction? Is this something that the halacha would recognize? Is this something that we should be celebrating? Or is it something that perhaps is a very questionable thing to do based on the rules and principles that the halacha dictates for us? So we begin with the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin, Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. Let's see together. Says the Gemara, Minayin L'Roes Chaveiro Shehu Toveya Benahar. If I happen to be a lifeguard, and I pass by a swimming pool, and I see that there is a child, Rahman al-Itzlan, God forbid, there is a child who is flailing in the water, who doesn't know how to swim, and I have the ability to go and save them. The problem is, I'm in the middle of a work call, I'm in the middle of doing something else, and I don't want to stop what I'm doing to go save them. Says the Gemara, how do you know that if I chance upon someone who is struggling, but I have the ability to save their life, how do you know that I should save them? Or how do you know if you have chaya gororoso, if you have somebody who's being attacked by an animal, and I happen to be a hunter, and I happen to know how to save, how to extricate that person from the situation, how do you know that I have to get involved, shehu chayiv lahatzilo, that I must save that person, tamalomar, lo samod al dam rayecha. The Torah says, you cannot stand by idly while somebody else is about to lose their life. Lo samod al dam rayecha, that's what the Torah says. Frakti Gemara, ask the Gemara, how do I even know that if I'm not a lifeguard and I don't know how to save someone myself, but I'm able to pay money to have somebody else come quickly and save that individual, how do you know that I even have to pay money? So the Torah learns that from another pasuk. But be it as it may, we learn from here. Lo samad adam reyecha means I have an obligation to pay attention. If there are things going on around me, I have to not only pay attention, but I have to get involved, I have to step in, I have to do what I can to try and be able to save the situation from being something far worse. At the same time, although this is quoted in the halacha in Shulchan Aruch and in the Rambam, there is another consideration which shows up twice in Shulchan Aruch as well. In Yeridaya, as well as in Chosh HaMishpat, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, "V'nishmartem me'od l'nafsho seichem," that we have to look out for ourselves. And aser la'adam lahachnis atzmo lematzav shel sakana. And I am not allowed to put myself in a situation of danger. I'm not allowed to do that if I know that I'm potentially endangering my own life. So sometimes you have to weigh both of these options. On the one hand, v'nishmartem me'od l'nafsho seichem, I have to go and protect myself. On the other hand, we have an obligation that if I see somebody who's in the line of fire, somebody who's in danger, I have to go and help them. So how do we balance those two? What you'll notice is the Gemara here does not discuss that case. The Gemara here does not talk about a case where I am endangering myself in order to save someone else. The Gemara here is discussing a case where it's easy for me to do, where there is no challenge to do this at all, where it's something very simple. and I'm a lifeguard or I'm a hunter, and it's very easy for me to go about doing this business, says the Gemara, in such a case, I would have an obligation. But what about when it's a more complicated case? What about when I'm not exactly sure how much danger there's going to be to my life by getting involved? Would I be allowed to do that? Take for an example. Let's say you have somebody who, God forbid, gets injured on the field. And you're going to have a chovesh, you're going to have a paramedic or an EMT who's going to come in as part of the war effort and going to save that person and extricate them to be able to bring them to a medical facility. Of course, there's a tremendous inherent danger in doing that. You're exposing yourself. The paramedic goes out, you don't have a special humanitarian license to go out and be saved. Our enemies don't discriminate, they don't distinguish. We know if they see somebody out there, they're going to indiscriminately kill them. So would a chovesh, would a medical personnel have a right to go out to the field to save somebody who otherwise is going to bleed out to death? Would they have the right to do that? Or would you say that that would be something that perhaps would not be appropriate and perhaps would not be allowed at all? Now, just to put this part of the conversation aside, there is a Gemara in Maseches Pesachim, in Maseches Yuma. It's a very famous Gemara where the Gemara tells us a concept, a principle, Shluchei Mitzvah, Einam Nizokim. The Gemara says if somebody is in the middle of engaging in a mitzvah, actively engaging in a mitzvah, we assume, we have a right to assume that they're not going to get damaged. No harm is going to befall them as they are engaging in that mitzvah. So you may ask, if Shluchei Mitzvah Einam Nizokim, then what's the whole discussion here? If I'm a paramedic and I'm going out to save someone's life who got injured, I'm a Shliach Mitzvah and nothing's going to happen to me. Which is the whole concept why we give somebody money before they go on a dangerous mission, when they go on a flight. Why? Because we want to say, you're now a Shliach Mitzvah, and Shluchei Mitzvah in a Nizokin. So if Shluchei Mitzvah in a Nizokin, then what's the whole discussion here? Why should there even be a question? It should be obvious. Of course you're allowed to do that. Of course I'm allowed to endanger my life to save someone else. Why? Because I'm a Shliach Mitzvah. And so long as I'm a Shliach Mitzvah, nothing's going to happen. The answer is, that is not applicable at all, because the Gemara very much limits that halacha. The Gemara says, although it's true that Shluchei Mitzvah Einam Nizokin, although it's true that Shliach Mitzvah will not be injured, however, the Gemara tells us, if it's a situation of Shchiach Hezeka, where it's so easy to get damaged, where it's such a dangerous situation, then that rule of Shluchei Mitzvah Einam Nizokin does not apply. For example, the Gemara gives us a case, we have a mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz on Leil Pesach. Now, for most situations, Bedikas Chametz is not a dangerous thing to do. You search around your house, you start looking around for the Chametz, you find it or you don't find it. But says the Gemara, what happens if I have a Chor Sheben Yisrael Va'akum? What happens if I have a hole in between my house and the house of a neighbor who's not a Jew? And we don't have a great relationship. And I'm going to start sticking my hands underneath the hole and searching for Chametz. And who knows what he's going to do to me? Maybe he's going to injure me. Maybe he's going to damage me as I do that. Says the Gemara, you can't say in such a case, Shluchei Mitzvah Einam Nizokin, because that is considered a case of Shchiach Hazeka. Now, maybe you should move out and move to a different neighborhood. You have such a horrible neighbor, and you have no confidence that he's going to keep your fingers intact when you stick them at the bottom of the wall. Maybe he's not the best neighbor, but be it as it may, the Gemara says, if you have a situation of Shchiach Hazeka, we do not apply the principle of Shluchei Mitzvah Einam Nizokin. So here also, if you have a situation where there is a very great concern that somebody's life is going to be in danger, Shluchei Mitzvah Einam Nizokin will not be a part of the equation. Question.
How do you explain accidents that happen with Hanukkah candles?
Amazing question. You're saying, how could it be that an accident happens in a Hanukkah candle if somebody is a Shliach Mitzvah? Now, that's a Shliach Hazeka. People are doing things that are not safe. I remember I was at home the Shabbos after Meiron, the terrible, terrible tragedy in Meiron, which, when you look at things that are going on now, we almost put that in the background and say, you know, halavai, it only would have been 45 people. This is a terrible calamity, but every loss of life is horrific. And after the calamity in Meiron, it was on a Thursday night. So that Friday night, I was walking home from shul, and it was the weeks of the year when they make early Shabbos. I happen to be davening at one of the earlier minyan. At the latest minyan, I'm walking home, and I see that there are fire trucks rushing by my house going to someone a couple of blocks away, two blocks away. So I assumed it was probably someone from shul. So I walk with my son to just check that everything was okay by this family's home. Come to the house, and the police are there, and the fire department is there, and they're putting out a fire. So I said, is everybody okay? The family walks out. Turns out the family decided, great idea, in the schus of an aliyas haneshama for all the 45 people who were killed in Meiron, they decided they were going to light 45 Shabbos candles. Okay? Very bad idea. Even worse than that bad idea is when they lit 45 candles and then went to sleep. So they lit 45 candles, went to sleep, and the third strike against them was not just 45 candles going to sleep, 45 candles going to sleep and putting the candles right next to the drapes in the dining room. And the whole house went up in flames, and the family was upstairs in their bedroom. So Baruch Hashem, everyone was safe, but not a good idea. That's called Shia Chazek. That's called being irresponsible. Now, there's a question. What are the percentages? What am I allowed to do? What am I not allowed to do? That's a very detailed question. But as a whole, we would say that the whole concept of Shluchei Mitzvah Inam Nizokim does not apply when we have a situation of Shchiach Hezeka and lighting fires right on top of the drapes. 45 of them is what I would call Shchiach Hezeka. Bad idea. Don't try this at home. Now, there's a very interesting discussion that the Meshech Chachma raises about what would you say when it's Lahatzalas, a greater group of people. Say, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu, I forgot if it's in Parshas Shmos or Va'era, but somewhere in the very beginning, probably Va'era. Va'era El Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Moshe, and he reveals himself by the snare, and he tells him, it's time to go back to Mitzrayim and save the Jewish people, right? That's the story in Parshas Va'era. So there the Torah says, Moshe Rabbeinu, I want to choose you to be the leader of the Jewish people. I want to choose you to be the one to go down and save the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. And he says, Lech shuv Mitzrayim ki mesu kol ha'anashim ha'mevakshim es nafshecha. Let's not forget, how did Moshe Rabbeinu end up out of Mitzrayim in the first place? Why did he leave? Why did he leave? He was a fugitive. He killed someone, now somebody wanted to kill him. He was afraid for his life, so he ran away. Now he's in Midian, and Baruch Hashem, it all worked out well for him. He met a good wife, and he stays over there, and everything's great. And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, all right, now it's time to go back. Why do you want me to go back? You should go back because we want you to save the Jewish people. You want me to save the Jewish people, but I'm afraid. Somebody's going to kill me. After all, that's why I came here in the first place. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, don't worry. Mesa kol ha'anashim ha'mevakshim es nafshecha, all those people who are trying to kill you, they're gone. There's no threat anymore. Okay, no threat anymore. Sounds good. So Moshe Rabbeinu should go back. What's the implication of that statement? Implication of the statement is that if there would still be a threat to his life, he wouldn't have to go back. Even though God just asked you to save the entire Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't want to save the entire Jewish people and kill myself. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu assured him, Mesu kol ha'anashim ha'mevakshim es nafshecha. I want you to save the Jewish people, but don't worry. All those people who were going after you, who wanted to kill you, are no longer alive. You have no reason to be concerned about them any longer. Now, says the Meshech Chachma, what do you see from there? What do you see from there? Writes the Meshech Chachma, what you see from there is, what? That even if the entire Jewish people are relying on you, but if my life is going to be in danger, I may not have a responsibility to go put myself on the line, even for the Jewish people. It's amazing chiddush, no? But the Meshech Chachma actually proves it from a Gemara. The Gemara says in Maseches Makos, we're told, the story of a Rotzeach B'Shogeg. What is the story of a Rotzeach B'Shogeg? A very unfortunate story. You have somebody who inadvertently kills another person. He's a Rotzeach B'Shogeg. He didn't intend to. Terrible thing. He probably feels horrible about it. Okay. What does the Torah prescribe for such a person? What? He has to go to the Ir Miklat. Now, not only does he have to go to the Ir Miklat, we give him the opportunity to go to the Ir Miklat. The Ir Miklat is a city of refuge where he'll be able to save his life. Why will he be able to save his life? Because the halacha is, we have a person who's referred to as the Goel Hadam. Goel Adam means the person who was killed, the shogeg, right, the person who died, their closest relative has a right to kill the person who killed him. You're referred to as the Goel Adam. The person who murdered is referred to as the Rotzeach B'Shogeg. The relative of the person who was murdered has a right to kill the murderer, unless he's in the Ir Miklat. So the Ir Miklat is the safe haven for him. Moment he steps out of the Ir Miklat, anyone, it's free for the relatives to come and kill him. Clear? Now, what happens if the case is a very unusual case. What happens if you have a scenario where it so happens that the person who ends up in the Ir Miklat for being a Ritzaf B'Shogeg, he was in a car accident, whatever, something terrible happens. Somebody loses his life. And now he runs to the Ir Miklat, but it just so happens that he is also the general of the Jewish army. And now a war breaks out. We can't have a war without the general being available. But now he's stuck in the Ir Miklat. But what's going to happen if he steps out to come and join the war effort? What happens then? What? He can be killed. The moment he steps out of the Ir Miklat, he's no longer in a safe haven. The relative of the person who died is able to kill him. Would I have an obligation as the general of the army looking out for the Jewish people? Would I have an obligation to leave the Ir Miklat, potentially risking my life in order to save the Jewish people in battle? Says the Gemara, no. Writes the Meshech Chachma, what do you mean no? The Jewish people need you. The answer is yes, I understand the Jewish people need me. But I may not have an obligation to give up my life even for the Jewish people. So this is a very, very expansive chiddush. This is something that needs a lot of discussion and a lot of thought. But I'm just bringing it to your attention as something to consider, as something to think about. So let's go a little bit of a simpler case. Let's say you have the case where you have an EMT who's going to go out into the field and save somebody who was injured. Now, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know that he's going to be injured or killed. But we do know that he's putting himself in a very dangerous position. Would he be allowed to do that or perhaps not? Would he be allowed to do that or perhaps not? What do you say? This is a major discussion in the Rishonim and the Acharonim. And there are three opinions. Two extremes are, you have an obligation to do so. If I'm only putting myself in a safek sakana, but I'm saving somebody else from a vadai sakana, I'm saving somebody else from losing their life, definitely losing their life, so then maybe I have an obligation to put myself in danger in order to for sure be able to save somebody who is in a immediate danger, who is going to die without my intervention. That's one opinion. The opposite opinion is, you're a chassid shote. This makes no sense. Why would I endanger my life to save somebody else? It's bad enough that one person's dying. What, we should end up with two dead people? So that doesn't make sense. And the middle opinion, which is that of the Pischei Tshuva in Yerodea, is that I have the right to decide, I have the right to choose on my own whether or not I'm going to put myself in danger. If I want to, I can. If I don't want to, I don't have to. Those are the three opinions. Opinion number one is, I have an obligation to jump in and save the life. Opinion number two on the opposite extreme is, I have a prohibition to jump in and save a life when it's endangering my own. And opinion number three is somewhere in the middle where we say, I have a right, it's a reshus. I have a right to choose whether I want to take this risk or perhaps not. Yeah.
According to the first opinion, would you not be allowed to take the job if it was offered to you, like in the first place? Like, let's say someone comes to you and says, oh, I want you to be an army medic. Would you have to say no?
So this is a very important question in contemporary society. Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva on one of his svarim from a person in Israel who wanted to become a firefighter. If you want to have a society, you can't have a society without firefighters and without many emergency personnel who are, by definition, a firefighter jumps into a fire. Sometimes it happens that a firefighter will die from smoke inhalation or from a burn that they incur. So what are you going to say? We're going to have a society without firemen, without fire personnel? That's impossible. That can't be. So how does it work? That's the major, major question. That's the problem. Again, a much longer discussion, but it's something that definitely needs a lot of thought. So this is a major, as we mentioned, this is a major discussion. Let's change the case just slightly. Let me change the case to our case, which is not that there is a question whether or not the person's going to lose his life, but where we know that the person is definitely going to lose his life by doing this. So you have a chayal, that is prepared to jump on a grenade to save the lives of others. Is that appropriate? Is that allowed? Or is that prohibited? Even according to those opinions that say I'm allowed to endanger myself, I'm allowed to make that choice, maybe that's only because we don't know what the outcome is going to be. But jumping on a grenade, we know what the outcome is going to be. Would I have a right to do that? Or perhaps not? Yeah.
But if he doesn't jump on it, aren't they all going to die anyways?
The question is, do I have a right to...
preemptively do it?
Yeah,
to but do... But I'm saying he's going to die anyways, so it's just a matter of him himself or him and everyone else.
Right, so that's part of the question. That's part of the question indeed. So let's see. Am I allowed to actively choose to bring about my own demise? Right? Let me give you a parallel case. You have somebody who's in the hospital on a ventilator who, it seems, al pidera hateva, they're going to die. Right? Systems aren't working, multi-organ failure, and they say, you know what? I don't want to deal with this. And they just turn off all the machines. That's what you're describing, right? I'm talking about a patient who has multi-organ failure, irreversible damage to the vital organs of the body. Right? So does a person have a right to be makariv misaso? Do I have a right to decide on my own that I'm going to take my own life, even if everything seems to be headed that way? No. I don't have a right to do that. So that's a parallel case. Yeah.
But that's a different situation because there's no topless to it. It's just to end your suffering, whereas in this other case...
That's a topless.
To help other people.
But that's a big topless.
Right, but it's a higher...
It's a personal.
It's higher value to help other people.
Right.
You're 100% going to die. It's just a matter of who else is going to.
Okay. So would I be allowed to take my own life in order to be able to give my organs to other people?
I would presume not. But you're not for sure dying in that situation also.
Well, if I give my heart, I'm kind of dead.
No, meaning it's not like, oh, but if I don't give my organs, then I won't die. Like,
what do you mean? I'll have another 2 weeks to live.
Right, so, but the grenade situation, that person is for sure going to die in the exact same amount of time.
No, why?
Maybe a few seconds later, but it's for sure going to happen.
It's the same thing. Yeah.
Doesn't Rabbi hold in the Gemara that there's water for enough for one person to live, but not enough for two people to live? The person should just take it for themselves so that they can live. So there's like a real value of like self-preservation, like dafka.
Yes.
So like maybe you should dafka not go do that.
So these are the big questions. These are the big, big questions. Yeah.
Sure, I was going to take you back. I thought that there was an opinion though that says if you want to get it, then you can't.
So let's start looking over here. Let's start looking over here in Parshas Noach. The Torah writes in Parshas Noach a very confusing pasuk. Hard to explain exactly what this pasuk means, but let's try to read it. Ach es dimchem lenafshoseichem edrosh. The Torah says, edrosh means I will hold you accountable for your neshama. What does that mean? I'll hold you accountable for your neshama? How do I even translate those words? Says Rashi, the way to understand this pasuk is, Af al pi shehitarti lachem netilas neshama bevehema. Even though I allowed you to take the life of an animal in order to consume it, in order to eat it, as dimchem edrosh mehashofech dam atzmo, I will not allow, there is no allowance at all to take one's own life. There is no allowance for one to take their own life. Committing suicide is not permissible. Isur d'oraisa. That's what the Gemara Baba Kama Tzadi Aleph learns from this pasuk in Parshas Noach. And therefore the Rambam writes in Hilchos Sanhedrin, what is the halacha if let's say you have somebody who commits a horrific crime, bemezid, intentionally. You have somebody who, God forbid, murders another person. What does the halacha say the punishment for that person should be? Misa. Right? The Beis Din will administer capital punishment and kill that person. We don't want murderers running around the street. So we're going to kill that person. What do I need in order to prosecute such an individual? I need witnesses to come in and say, we saw this happen and we know with certainty that this is the case, that this is the story, and then Beis Din will act accordingly. What happens if there are no witnesses? But somebody confesses, somebody comes into Beis Din and says, I want you to know, I came home one night I saw this and this person in my house. I was so enraged. I was so upset. I lost myself. And I killed them. And there's no proof of it. But I'm telling you. I'm confessing. I'm a murderer. I feel horrible about it. Give me the death penalty because that's what I deserve. Will we accept the testimony of an individual on his or her own who comes to the Beis Din and gives over such a confession? What's the halacha? No. Why not? Why not? Says the Rambam, because my life doesn't belong to me. The Radvaz explains, Hanafashos lihena. Ein nafsho shel adam kinyano. If it's my money and I decide I want to throw my money out the window and waste it, that's yours. You can do that. But if I decide that I want to take my life and throw it out the window and waste it, it doesn't belong to me. My money, my possessions belong to me. I can choose to spend them wisely. I can choose not to. But my body does not belong to me. And because my body doesn't belong to me, therefore, I don't have the ability to make a choice, to make a decision about what to do with my body based on the way I want to spend it or not spend it. So therefore, if somebody shows up in a Beis Din and says, you know, I know that I'm guilty of X or Y, and therefore I want you to give me capital punishment because that's what I know I deserve, it doesn't matter what you say. There are rules and regulations of how we administer capital punishment and what is required in order to prosecute an individual before doing so. Maybe we'll lock you up in jail because we don't want you roaming around the streets. You sound to be like a dangerous person, but we're definitely not going to kill you. I actually had an amazing story just a couple of weeks ago on Chol HaMoed. Somebody called my father. I'm not going to give any identifying details. Somebody called my father. He said that his daughter went to regular schools and then she went to Eretz Yisrael for the year and she just came back and she's very confused and she feels that she wants to start the process of transitioning because she feels very uncomfortable being a woman, and she always felt that that's not where she belongs. So very sad, very unfortunate. So he spoke to my father about it. My father told him that the Rambam writes here, Hanafashos lihena, our bodies don't belong to us. We don't have a right to decide to mutilate ourselves. There's no heter in the Torah to go ahead with such a procedure. We don't have a right to do that. Okay, they had a conversation. A couple minutes later, the girl called my father and said, my father told me that he just spoke to you and asked the shayla, I'd like to understand. And they had about a half hour conversation. I was so moved by it. My father spoke to her very patiently and explained his position to her and gave her a bracha that she should have clarity in life and she should be able to come to a sense of where her rightful place is without having this surgery. And the girl at the end of the conversation accepted it and basically said, I was brought up and raised to ask shailas in every other aspect of my life. I never even knew that this was a question. And she appreciated having the conversation. It was amazing to me. But that's what the Rambam writes here. And that's what the Torah says in this week's Parsha. Our bodies don't belong to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides how we're going to live, where we're going to live, and what kind of people we're going to be. And it's not up to us to make those determinations. That's in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not up to us to decide when life should end. It's not up to us to decide when life begins. Right? The Gemara says in Maseches Tainis, one of the maftechos that was not given over to human beings is the maftech shel chaya. Person never knows with precision exactly when somebody's going to be born. And nobody knows when a person is going to die. The doctors can make all kinds of predictions, but we know it's not always the reality. It doesn't always work out that way. So, committing suicide is something that is considered to be a very serious avera to the point it's so exaggerated that in Maseches Smachos, the Tanaim write, Ama'abid atzma ladas, somebody who commits suicide, we don't bury them in a Jewish cemetery. We don't rip kriya for them. We don't say hespedim for them. That is all with the following caveat. Chasam Sofer writes, number one, if it is going to be a tremendous humiliation for the family, people are going to find out that a family member died, And then they're going to have to disclose why it happened because they're not sitting Shiva and there's no Levaya. If it's going to be a tremendous humiliation for the family, writes the Chasam Sofer, we will choose the kavod of the family over any of these rules. That's number one. But number two, the Acharonim write as well that the only time we have this discussion of Ma'abed Atzma Ladas, of somebody who commits suicide, doesn't have a right to be buried in the Jewish cemetery, and we don't sit Shiva for them, and all the above, all of that only applies when we're dealing with someone who does it Kederach HaPhilosophim. You're doing it because you believe philosophically, theologically, this is the right way to navigate the world. It's better not to be alive than to be alive. But somebody who has a mental illness or somebody who has such tremendous, tremendous pain in life that then leads them to do such an act, that is not what we're describing here. That is not what we're describing here. So this is a very unusual case. We don't hear often about suicides in general. And even when we do, we generally hear about somebody who dies by suicide, not because they made a choice to do so, but because they're in so much pain and internal suffering and agony that they are led to do such a thing. But that's not what we're describing. There is a famous saying, "Hama'abid atzmo ladas ein lo chelek le'olam haba." Someone who dies by suicide does not have a chelek in olam haba. And that is a big question. Where does that phrase come from? Who made that up? Who said, "Ma'abed atzmo ladas ein lo chelek le'olam haba"? One of the Acharonim writes, perhaps the reason why this is true is because someone who's ma'abed atzmo ladas, somebody who takes his life, normally when you do an aveira, there's always the opportunity to do tshuva. But when somebody does this aveira, you're not alive anymore to do tshuva for it. So ein lo chelek le'olam haba. Interesting. Interesting perspective. So what's clear is that Ma'abed Atzma Ladas is considered to be something that we take very seriously. It's not Staman Aveir. It's considered to be something very, very serious on the list of severity of different Aveiros that one can commit. So now let's get to the painful question. Would you say that somebody, a soldier, who is faced with this horrifying dilemma, has a right to volunteer to give up his life for the sake of others who he's going to be saving? Or would you say, no, that is called committing suicide willingly? You don't have a right to take your own life. You don't have a right to put yourself into that situation. So that is the major, major question. Let's see, is there any precedent in Tanakh for this kind of scenario? Question?
Yeah. Would it fall under that you're preventing someone from being killed and like, you could die for like the three Aveirot. Mm-hmm. So by you dying, you're preventing other people from being killed. So that like comes to play.
Good question. Am I allowed to give up my life to prevent other people from being killed? Because we know one of the three Aveirot that I'm allowed to give up my life for is Avodah Zarah, Hili Arayos, and Shvichas Damim. The answer to that is no. Because Shvichas Damim means only if I was asked to kill another person, not if someone else is going to take the life of another person. So that wouldn't be a piece of this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We would say that this is the idea of continuing your life. So any type of death that happens in the context of a morally would be such a thing?
So we'll get to wars in a minute. Okay? Let's first go and see if there's any precedent in Tanakh for such an idea. Shaul HaMelech is one of the most tragic figures in all the pages of Tanakh. I think we spoke about him before Rosh Hashanah. I don't remember, did we? Shaul HaMelech, we're told, Ben Shana Shaul B'Malcho. Shaul HaMelech was 1 year old when he became the king of the Jewish people. Ask the Gemara, Maseches Yuma, really? You could be the most mature 1 year old in the world, but still, you can't be the king of the Jewish people. It's impossible. So what does it mean that Shaul HaMelech was 1 year old when he was the leader of the Jewish people? It can't be. Says the Gemara, he was kiven shana lechet. He was so innocent. He was so pure and perfect. He had never violated an aveira in his life. That was Shaul HaMelech. He was referred to in the Nevi'im as Bechir Hashem. He was the chosen one by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself because he was such a perfect human being. So what happened? Later on, Kara Hashemes Mamlachtecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away the leadership from Shaul HaMelech and destroys him, kicks him out of the position, and replaces him with David. So let's read a story about the fight, about the end of Shaul HaMelech's life when he's fighting against the Plishtim. Let's see what the Nevi'im say. Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Lamed Aleph. Let's read it together. Uplishtim nolchamim b'Yisrael. The Plishtim are waging war against the Jewish people. Vayanusu anshe Yisrael mepnei aplishtim. And the Jewish people are retreating. They're afraid. The Plishtim are this mighty army. The Jewish people realize they cannot overcome the Plishtim. So they retreat. They run away. Vatichbad amolchame el shol. And the war intensifies. Vayimsa'uhu amorim anashim b'keshes. Vayachem ha'od me'amorim. And suddenly a group of snipers shows up. And Shaul HaMelech has, his army is retreating. He's in the middle of the battlefield. Snipers are right in front of him. He doesn't know what to do. There's nowhere to go. Vayomer Shaul Anosei Kelev. Shaul HaMelech has a secret service agent standing right next to him. And he tells him, listen carefully. Shlof charbecha v'dakreni ba. I want you to take my sword. And Shaul HaMelech says, I'm instructing you to kill me. What do you mean? Instructing me to kill you? How can I kill you? You're the general of the army. You're Shaul HaMelech. You're the king. How can I kill my Jewish brother? Because, pen yavo ha'arelim ha'ele v'dakruni. Because maybe the enemy is going to come. Look at this firing squad they have here. Look at the sniper unit. Maybe they're going to come and kill me. This alulubi. And they're going to come and make a disgrace out of me. V'lo ava nosei kelav. Secret service agent has been risking his life for Shaul HaMelech for years. So now I'm going to go kill him? He couldn't bring himself to do it. Imagine the intensity of the moment. Shaul HaMelech says, no, no, no. I asked you to kill me. Now is the time to listen to my orders. And he says, I can't bring myself. I'm a loyal servant to you. How am I going to kill you? Back and forth, to Shaul HaMelech realizes he's not getting anywhere. So Shaul takes matters into his own hands, and he kills himself. Shaul HaMelech kills himself. Vayarno sekelav kimei Shaul. This secret service agent realizes that Shaul HaMelech killed himself. Vayipol gamhu al charbo vayamas imo. He can't manage, he can't handle what just happened. And he kills himself as well. When one looks at the story, when one analyzes the story, you can't stop but to wonder, what right did Shaul HaMelech have to take his own life? Why did he do that? If the enemy decides to kill you, they'll kill you. If the enemy decides to take you hostage, they'll take you hostage. But what right does Shaul HaMelech have to kill himself? A Jew's not allowed to take his own life. So how do you justify the actions of Shaul HaMelech? This is a question that is asked by the great Rishonim. Some Rishonim write that Shaul HaMelech asa shelo kedin, that there was no justification for what he did. He was wrong. Sounds strange to say it. Sounds very heroic. What he did sounds like the right thing to do. But some Rishonim say it was absolutely the wrong thing to do. Nobody should learn from this because Shaul HaMelech asa shelo kedin. Shaul HaMelech did the wrong thing. The Balei HaTosfos write, let's assume Shaul HaMelech did the right thing. So what's the justification? Balei HaTosfos write, maybe the justification was, these are all just suggestions. Maybe the justification was that Shaul HaMelech knew if he's going to be taken hostage by the enemy, what are they going to do to him? They're going to torture him to the point where they won't allow him to practice life as a Jew. So then why should I live? I'm going to have to serve Avodah Zarah. I'm going to have to give up my religion. So why should I live? May as well just kill myself now. And that was why Shaul HaMelech felt his actions were justified. The Das HaKeinim, one of the Rishonim, Balei HaTosfos writes, horrifying story from the days of the Crusades, where there were children who were told that they were going to be taken by the Christian community and they were going to make them part of the Christian religion. And there were parents who went to their children and actually killed their own children, because they said, we would rather our children not be alive than our children have to be over the Avodah Zarah. And this became a massive debate in the days of the Rishonim, whether this is an appropriate thing to do to one's child. It's terrible. It's a horrifying story. But that's what the Rishonim talk about. Maybe learning from the story of Shaul HaMelech that if one has the alternative to live a life not being able to perform or observe any mitzvos, why is that a life worth living? Maybe in such a case, I'd be allowed to take my life. Beis Yosef writes a possibility. Maybe the reason why Shaul HaMelech did it is because he knew he was going to be tortured by the enemy. And if somebody knows they're going to be facing such tremendous yisurim, such unbearable pain, forget about religion. Maybe unbearable pain is a right that I have to say, I don't want to go through all of that and just take my life now. So this is a major discussion in the Rishonim. The Yamshel Shlomo writes, maybe the reason why Shaul HaMelech felt this was justified was because he made a calculation. I'm the general of the army. What's going to happen if they capture me? They're going to go and parade me around. The soldiers are going to lose morale. We're going to end up losing thousands of Jewish soldiers as a result of the fact that they took me into captivity. There's going to be a prisoner exchange or whatever happens. And Shaul HaMelech said, it's not worth it. For the war effort, it's not worth it. So there are many, many different perspectives that people have in trying to understand what it is that Shaul HaMelech did and why it is that it was potentially justifiable what he did. The problem is when you have such a shaila and there is no real definitive answer and we don't know exactly why Shaul HaMelech was allowed to do what he did, so then how do you translate that story into our case? How do you translate that story into the hero last week who decided to do this? Is he right? Is he wrong? Is he allowed to do such a thing? So here we come upon a comment of the Minchas Chinuch. We mentioned before that there are three mitzvahs in the Torah that are considered to be so severe. Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayos, and Shfichas Damim. That somebody who violates those is considered to be terrible. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And I have to be willing to give up my life as not to violate Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayos, and Shfichas Damim. Says the Minchas Chinuch, you've got it wrong your whole life. You always heard that there were three cardinal sins that you have to be willing to give up your life for? Really, there's a fourth. After all, the Torah says we are introduced to the mitzvah of Melchama. Did you ever hear of a war in the history of the world, wherever it is, where somebody didn't die? There's no such thing. Even the most outrageous war where it was won in 6 days, people died. People lose their lives. That's what happens. The nature of war. People die. Says the Minchas Chinuch, how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu instruct me to go to war when he knows that there's a possibility that I'm going to die? That doesn't make sense. That's not one of the cardinal sins. That's not one of the three. So how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu expect me to do that when he knows that I'm giving up my life? Good question. Answers the Minchas Chinuch, from the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mitzvah of Melchama, it means by definition he knows that people are going to die, but still he told us to go out to Melchama. That means that Melchama is a worthwhile reason for somebody to be willing to give up their life as part of the war effort. And it's not what you always thought. It's not that there are three mitzvahs in the Torah that are worth giving your life for. Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayos, Shvichas Damim. There's a fourth. There's Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayos, Shvichas Damim, Melchemes Mitzvah. And for Melchemes Mitzvah, I have to be willing to give up my life. What you see from that is that when we deal with a Melchemes Mitzvah, we don't look at the regular parameters of Pikuach Nefesh that we would otherwise be concerned about. This seems to be in that special category. Pikuach Nefesh is not a factor. war effort is the factor that I have to worry about. What is the best possibility that the war effort will be successful? That's the question I need to focus on, and that is what I need to pay attention to. Is this good for the war effort? Is it bad for the war effort? That is the entire discussion, and that's where it starts, and that's where it ends. And says the Menchas Chinuch, that is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mitzvah of milchama, even though he knew, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows better than anyone else, people are going to die in milchama, but that's the definition of war. And still the Ribono Shel Olam told us to do it. Which means, when it comes to milchama, this is not where the concern lies. The Netziv writes in his commentary on Chumash, a very interesting pasuk, Miyad ish achiv edrosh nefesh ha'adam. If somebody kills another person, I will hold that person accountable, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Netziv, Miyad ish achiv means b'shah shehim noagim ba'achla. When you have two people who are living like regular human beings, living in a community, that's when we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu will hold one person accountable for another. However, when we're not ba'achla, when we're in milchama, then the rules of pikuach nefesh are out the window. That's not what we worry about. What we worry about is the best outcome for these war efforts. That has to be the priority. That is the entire concern. And that's it. And therefore, we assume that that is why this would be something that certainly would be permissible. If a chayal believes, Rahmana Litzlan, if he's put in such a situation, he believes it's best for the war effort that he give up himself and spare the others, he would certainly be allowed to do that, and there would be no concern and no problem at all. That is the way the Menchas Chinuch understands it. And based on that, my father once told me, let's say you have a chayal who's concerned that he's going to be captured, and as a result of that, they're going to torture him and get secrets, army secrets out of him, which happens. So the chayal is concerned about that. He would have the same heter. He would have the same allowance to take life into his own hands and not allow the war effort to fail as a result of his potential life being saved. These are all very painful and very difficult questions. But these are real. These are real, real life scenarios that face our Jewish army on an ongoing basis. And it's an opportunity for us, we hope and we pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Neshalma Parim Sefasenu. Our discussion about these issues should be something that should never be brought to be lemaisa. It should be something that we should just have academic discussions about, whether it's right, whether it's wrong, whether it's something that someone should ever be faced with or not. We hope that the Ribono Shel Olam will be merachem on all of us, be merachem on all of Klal Yisrael, on all the Jewish people. Ba'al tiru v'al tachbezu, and we hope that our soldiers will not be afraid. We hope that they will be courageous. We hope that they will have the clarity of vision and the clarity of purpose, the clarity of mission, to understand what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of them. Ki Hashem Elokeichem, haholeichim achem, lihilachem lachem, imoyveichem lehoshiaschem, v'nomar